from DTI, from DAF, from health departments, and good morning, members from the media team, and also interested parties from the public, officials from within parliament. How are you? I'm very, very happy. So, always happy, especially on a Monday. Take it, this is a Monday. Good morning, Ingos. We only have two items for today. If we remember very well, when we met last week, we resolved that we should dispense off with one item that deals with processing of the nomination of the National Agriculture Marketing Council. Maybe just information more than engaging in any discussion on that one. And the second one, it is the very subject matter that we are about, the injected chicken. I just thought maybe we could just dispense off with this subject matter of the processing of the nomination of the National Agriculture Marketing Council. It is just information, and we begin a process from here going forward. You want to say something, Dr. Bosman?
Chair, yes, I've got a motion that I would also like to table before the committee. I don't know if you want to have it, just after your proposed the debate on the nomination, or where would you like me to do a motion?
Is it related to one of the subject matters that we're dealing with?
It's related to let me say what it is about. It's related to
wait, Dr. Bosman.
It's obviously related to our committee's work and the reports that we compile.
I'm also not even sure how we process such. You know, this institution is governed by some rules. How we process things like those. We shall be guided by the committee secretariat on that one.
Just to help you, I think a motion, I can table a motion at any time, but I want to just confer with you on when to do that.
Can we just dispense off with these two items and then we conclude with that one? Thank you. The first area that deals with the nomination process, information that is before me says that we have 15 members of the council that are supposed to be nominated for the minister's attention. There is another process that is that has begun. 2 weekends ago, there was an advert that went out that invites the nominations for the council. All of the 15 are supposed to be replaced. 5 comes from the industry in terms of far as those committees are concerned, and 10 are some that we are supposed as parliament to nominate. The minister receives those and she appoints a selection panel that shortlists for her attention. for her finally to appoint. We have distributed the actual act itself. I take it that members did receive the act. There is also an advert that went out as well, circulated. I also take that also has been circulated as well. Now, the interest for now and the processes thereof would be that maybe if each member can nominate so that next week when we come back, we bring those together and start a process of once again, the unfortunate part is that we become a post office. In other words, we receive nominations, we hand them over to the minister. That's what the law says, unfortunately. We are not playing any role beyond receiving nominations insofar as engaging with the CVs, engaging with those nominated and those kinds of things. Now, that's the unfortunate part with the Act as it stands currently. It does frustrate us, we must mention, because it does not give us much role, if any, save for being a post office. I thought one should outline that process. My idea that I have is that if we could perhaps each member, you know, lobby or, you know, invite, you know, two of those nominees to be brought for us to be able to say this is what we have as portfolio committee on agriculture. Apparently, I'm informed that the NCOP has already done with this process. That is it from my side.
Chairman, I agree with you. I think we have discussed it before in connection with other boards that were also brought under our attention in the same manner. And previously, if you can remember, the board on the land bank, we have actually amended put in a member's amendment to the Act, so that this committee can also have some insight in the applications and shortlist those members that we think is suitable for the positions. If the Act does not make provision for it, I think the least that we can do is to ask the minister permission to get the information and also have our opinion made clear on the applicants. The reason why I'm saying it is that because of the fact that the oversight, we are playing an oversight role, makes it very difficult if we cannot and have no input on the board's composition. I think it is, as far as Parliament is concerned, not a very suitable way of handling the issue. So I would second, and actually if we have gone second in the chair, I'll propose that we do write to the minister and ask permission to also have a role to play in compiling a shortlist.
I don't think we take any discussion on that one. That is an obvious, straightforward. It is one of those decisions that we took in our last session when we were dealing with one of these, you know, boards or board appointments, which will then mean that as soon as it is possible, we'll have to write that letter to the minister and request such, you know, a leverage, as it were. Are we fine, members? Okay. Members, let's then move forward straight to the issues that we are about for the day. We have here apologies before we start from four members. One member who has sent an apology is Mr. Kale. and the other member, it's a written apology, I must mention. There are three verbal apologies. Mrs. Pilusi Muswana, Mr. Abraham Suleiman, four in fact, Mr. Gayla, and Mrs. Chichitelo. I did ask at one point a question about the continued absence of Mrs. Chichitelo. And there is a standing apology. Whether what the rules say, when a person continues to be absent, of course, with an apology, never to have set a foot in any of our committees. You know, when there was a debate, I think 2 weeks ago, I only got to see her for the first time. There she is, with a name written there. Otherwise, I wouldn't have known her. Perhaps I could have been seeing her all the time, but without knowing who she is. Now, can you bring us some information in our next session, which is next week, on this subject matter, so that we lay it to rest once. Okay. Now, members, there is Dr. Ntabele from DAF, who is going to be presenting. There is also Mr. Hannibal from DTI, and also Mr. Pretorius from Health Department. And we do have presentations from Department of Agriculture, Forest and Fisheries, and also DTI. We do not, let me speak for myself, I do not have a presentation in front of me from Department of Health.
Thank you, Chair.
Can we get an indication from the committee secretary?
I inquired Chairperson as to whether we'll get the presentation. I was told by Mr. That he's just going to quote from a report on the matter. Even that quote, he will email it to me after the meeting.
Are we fine with that, members? Okay, let's go straight to the presentations. Dr. Nsamele, if you have anybody you're with, just quick introduction and then we go forward. Same with Mr. Hannibal, if you have any delegation, quick introduction and go forward and so on and so forth. Thanks.
Chairperson and honorable members, good morning. I've come here with Mr. Mogeza Ramasodi, who is the Acting Chief Director, Inspections. And I also have Ms. Maputi Kutu, who is the technical person responsible for the issue that we're going to discuss, from the Directorate Food Safety and Quality Assurance, the Subdirectorate Agricultural Products Quality Assurance. Thank you, Chair. May I go on? Honorable members, we're presenting to you today the issue with regards to brine injection in poultry. The presentation will give a brief background on the regulators that apply to poultry in broad terms. It will also deal with some background on the brine injection. It will also deal with stakeholder communication, and after that we'll talk a little bit about preliminary results and then follow-up actions. Poultry is regulated in government by the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries. It's also regulated by the Department of Health and also by the National Regulator for Compulsory Specifications. In the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, it is regulated through the Meat Safety Act, Act 40 of 2000. It is also regulated through the Agriculture Product Standards Act. What we are going to speak to you today from the Department of Agriculture is with regards to the Agriculture Product Standards Act, Act number 119 of 1990. Specifically, it regulates the sale of poultry meat in terms of regulation number 946 of 1992, which makes provisions for the tenderization of breast meat of a carcass. It's important to point this in the sense that, as we have spoken with industry, our regulations do not allow for the tenderization of individually quick frozen products or the portions, as it were. And in terms of our regulation, we allow maximum water pickup and or chemical treatment of a carcass limited to 8%. In terms of the Department of Health, the regulation is with regards to the Foodstuffs, Cosmetics and Disinfectant Act of 1972. And in terms of its Section 2, it prohibits the sale, manufacture, import for sale of any foodstuffs to which any substance has been added so as to increase the mass or volume of such foodstuffs with the object to deceive. I think that bullet point tries to say that it seeks to protect the consumer from false declarations. And in terms of their new labeling and advertising regulations, which were published in March 2010, these regulations will only be implemented from 1st of March in 2012. And the reason being that a 24-month grace period has been afforded to industry to ensure that they comply with these regulations. These labeling regulations have what is called a quantitative ingredient declaration, which determines that the presence of one or more valuable or characterizing ingredients, or in the case where the description has the same effect, then the ingoing percentage of that ingredient at the time of manufacture will have to be declared. And the example is given below there, that in the case where chickens contain 92% chicken and 8% water, the labeling should state so that it is 92% chicken and 8% water. These regulations have also included the definition for brine, and brine is described as a solution of sodium chloride in water where the solution is used for curing, flavoring, and or preserving the foodstuff. The National Regulator for Compulsory Specification is an SOE established from the 1st of September 2008 under the DTI. It is primarily responsible for administration of three acts, mainly the Act that created, Act 5 of 2008, the Trade Metrology Acts, and the National Building Regulations and Building Standards Act. It also administers some regulations that fall under the jurisdiction of other departments as per agreement reached with respective departments. And here we could quote the regulations for fish under the Department of Health. The NCRS serves to regulate the adherence to compulsory specification and technical regulations in South Africa. This regulation's function addresses flaws in the market system whereby business may produce, import or sell products or services that may harm the consumer and or the environment or may fall short of what is promised in terms of quantity or safety. Therefore, in the example that we gave earlier, if the chicken from Sunshine Chickens, as we said, it's 92% chicken and 8% water, trade metrology would determine that they would have to measure the accuracy of those measurements to the extent that it is indeed 92% chicken and 8% water. And that is how they assist in terms of addressing regulations that are made by other departments. So they determine quantitatively that those measures do in fact meet those requirements. Another example that we could give is that if you buy a pack of potatoes and it is said that it is 2 kilograms, so they would be able, through trade metrology, determine that actually those products are actually 2 kilograms. Poultry meat is also regulated in terms of South African National Standards 289 and 458 under the Sale of Goods regulations published in June 2007. They prescribe specific procedures to be applied when testing frozen products where water is added or where it is glazed. The NRCS will also amend their standards to prevent injections for weight gain, yield enhancements, through saying that poultry meat may not be injected with any liquid or substance purely for weight gain. You will recall that we have just referred to regulations from health, which says that there must be a specific intention, whether it is for curing or for improving flavor of the chicken. But it cannot be solely for the sake of increasing the weight of the chicken so that you make more money. The issue with regards to brine injection was determined by the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries as a challenge. And our response to it was to commission research in this area to establish the extent of the problem. And as part of looking at the extent of the problem, we also wanted to establish how to resolve those problems. South Africa is a member of the WTO, to which we also ascribe to the SPS and the TBT agreements, and part of it has to do with using science as a basis for decision making. Therefore, we cannot wake up one morning and willy-nilly decide on a regulation. It must be informed by a risk assessment or some other scientific basis. And to that extent, we have commissioned this research with ARC. We have received results, which are preliminary at this stage. They are not yet final. The aim of the research is ultimately to help us look at what is the chemical composition of these products that are used to be injected in chicken, and also to determine the maximum level that we would finally recommend in terms of regulation, to say, based on these studies, we have established that 12, 10, 15, 30% is the best percentage to be added to the product. We've engaged with the NRCS and the Department of Health to form what we call a technical regulators on agricultural products, and we have agreed to a joint survey to determine the percentage range at which this injection is currently taking place. And we have also determined that the amount of brine injection varies per abattoir and per deadline specifications. What will happen is that this is a continued engagement, and we are going to also be inviting members of industry as well as consumers to these discussions. The preliminary results that we can talk to is that there is in essence, adulteration of products. And we find that there's a high moisture content, and that during sowing and cooking, that moisture results in fluid leaving the chicken. There are also health considerations that could be of importance to the Department of Health. This largely stems from the high level of sodium that is found in this product. The specific results are also saying that there's nutrient dilution and the higher sodium levels, and as a result, the salt levels are very high. The final report is scheduled for end of April 2011. That is if the ARC and the other partners that are involved in the research stay up to date. Our intention is finally to review our current regulatory regime, and I think in the end it will apply to us and to the Department of Health as well as the NRCS should it be necessary. Clearly, from our point of the Agriculture Products Standards Act, it is necessary, and therefore we will proceed as such. We look towards this research report to assist us in finally determining the effective regulation of prion injection technique. I must also caution that this technique is also practiced outside of South Africa, and so there is some international practice of this injection, and we would also review what other countries are limiting this injection to, so as to compare what our results from research are saying vis-a-vis what the international practice is. Our inspectors will also continue to conduct inspections and prioritize the action to ensure the compliance with our regulations. We look forward to finalizing this research to determine the effective method that we can use for inspection purposes to determine the water pickup of poultry. Thank you very much, Chair and honourable members.
That was quick and straight to the point. What we will do, members, will allow all the presentations, and then we take one set of questions thereafter. Yes. TGI?
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning, Chair and honourable members. I've got a fairly short presentation. Let me start by very briefly introducing my colleagues from the National Regulator for Compulsory Specifications. We've got Henry, Marianne, and Jaco joining us today from NRCS. Henry is an investigator, and Marianne and Jaco are senior managers at the NRCS, which is a DTI mandated institution. Honourable members, I'd like to take you briefly through a couple of issues. Firstly, what is the nature of our concern with the Botox chicken, as it's been loosely called? Honourable members will recall that this starts from a media report in December that chickens have been reprocessed or reworked in South Africa. So I'd like to go through what is the nature of our concern with this process. Secondly, I'd like to talk through some of the policy tools that might be available to specifically DTI, but more generally government, to deal with the issues, if indeed we believe it's a significant concern. Then I'd like to go through some underlying problems that this particular example, I think, brings to the fore in the way that South Africa deals with food safety and food quality issues. And finally, a very brief conclusion. Starting with the nature of the concern, firstly, is our concern about consumer safety? Now, clearly, brine, which is mainly composed of water and salt, in high concentrations and high quantities is a potential health risk. But in relatively small concentrations, brine is not necessarily a major health concern. It poses relatively few specific health risks. I think the key issue is around the concentration level and the quantity of brine that we see in particular products. Secondly, are we concerned about consumer welfare? Now, from a DTI perspective, this is clearly a major concern for us. If consumers are being sold a kilogram of chicken, but effectively what consumers are receiving is 600 grams of chicken or 700 grams of chicken and 200 to 300 grams of salty water, essentially, then I think we should be concerned about value for money for consumers and whether consumers aren't perhaps being ripped off to some extent. So they're not actually receiving what they expect to receive. So for us, consumer welfare is a key concern in this particular example. Thirdly, consumer awareness. Are we concerned about consumer awareness? From a DTI perspective, we would say that a consumer across LSM levels in South Africa, whether a rich consumer or a poor consumer, may decide to purchase reprocessed or reworked chicken, or may decide to purchase chicken that has a very high brine content, leaving aside the safety issues with regard to that. But I think the key issue from a DTI perspective is whether consumers are aware of what they're purchasing. Are you aware that if you buy a frozen chicken, you might be buying 70% chicken and 30% water, or 80% chicken and 20% water, and are you then still receiving good value for money? So I think we need to be quite specific about what specific area of this broad engagement we are most concerned about. Is it consumer welfare? Is it consumer awareness? Has there been full disclosure? Or are we concerned about whether the product is actually safe and doesn't present a health risk for consumers? Now, in terms of some of the policy tools that are available to us as DTI specifically, firstly, the Consumer Protection Act is quite useful in this area. Section 25(1) of the Consumer Protection Act talks about disclosure of reconditioned or grey market goods. Now, those are fairly generic terms, but they clearly might apply to the example of reworked or reprocessed chicken. And the Act says a person who offers or agrees to supply or supplies any goods that have been reconditioned, rebuilt, or remade, and that bear the trademark of the original producer or supplier must apply a conspicuous notice to those goods stating clearly that they've been reconditioned, rebuilt, or remade, as the case may be. And here I think the issue is around whether consumers have access to appropriate and accurate information so that consumers can take an informed decision about whether to purchase a particular product or not. In the example in December, it appears as if full disclosure wasn't actually there at the outset. Obviously, the Consumer Protection Act implementation only begins on the 1st of April 2011, so until the 1st of April 2011, there's not specifically much that we can do about it, but certainly once the Act is in full play and is implemented, then consumers would be able to complain to the Consumer Tribunal that they've been misled by either a retailer or a producer of a particular product. Secondly, the Consumer Protection Act also talks about consumers' rights to safe, good quality goods. And here the key issue is that every consumer has the right to inter alia goods that are of a good quality, in good working order and free of any defects, and of course must comply with the relevant SAN standards. And my colleague from DAF has already referred to the standards that are in play in this particular instance. And yeah, our concern is about, are we convinced that reworked or reprocessed chicken is of a good quality? Can a consumer potentially complain to the Consumer Tribunal that by purchasing a reworked chicken or reprocessed chicken, which perhaps has not been disclosed as such, are they actually receiving a good quality product? And I think that this is a little bit more open-ended. It's not entirely clear that the poultry industry would fall foul of this particular part of the Consumer Act, but I think certainly from a DTI perspective, it's one of the policy tools that we believe would be available. Some other policy tools that we would propose, perhaps a watch list. Perhaps as government and members will know that there are three government departments here today, perhaps within government we need to say that in this particular industry, we've seen a number of practices which are of concern to government and to members of parliament, and perhaps we need to compile a short watch list of products that we need to be monitoring a bit more proactively and a bit more regularly than would otherwise be the case. And poultry could be on that particular list. Thirdly, consumer awareness interventions, and my colleague has touched on this issue as well. Maybe we need to work with consumer bodies to educate consumers about the products that are consumed. What is it that you are actually buying when you buy a frozen chicken or frozen chicken pieces? And we may want to undertake specific awareness campaigns dealing with specific industries at shop floor level within retail stores. And I think there's a real opportunity for government and the retail sector to work together to ensure that our consumers are better educated about what it is that they're purchasing in South Africa. Moving now to the underlying problems, we would argue that this isolated case, a relatively isolated case, highlights a number of what we would argue are latent deficiencies in South Africa's food safety system. And we see a number of concerns arising. Firstly, honorable members will know that a large number of different pieces of legislation are at play when it comes to food safety. There are 12 primary pieces of legislation that apply, but there are a range of other secondary pieces of legislation that also come into play when you talk about food safety across a range of products, both fresh products and processed food products. Secondly, the mandate is spread across three national departments. We've got DTI, DAF, and Department of Health here today. DTI and DAF in particular have agencies, and NRCS is here, the South African Bureau of Standards, is the second agency of DTI that would be relevant in this case. DAF also has a number of agencies that play in this particular domain. So it's a full area of work for a number of departments. There are a range of departments and government agencies that are active in this particular area. Thirdly, we would argue that enforcement and compliance takes place unevenly in terms of quality and adherence to regulations, and secondly, takes place at different tiers of government. So you have national departments responsible for some elements of food safety. You also have local and provincial departments responsible for others. Department of Health, for example, works through environmental health practitioners who are responsible for monitoring compliance at local government level. So the domain in which we see this particular issue arising is even further clouded by the fact that compliance takes place at different levels within the government structure. I'm sure that many departments come to the portfolio committee and say this, but in this particular instance, we do have to acknowledge that the food safety units in the three departments are typically generally quite under-resourced. Human resource skills are thin on the ground. Budget to undertake work in this area is also generally quite thin. And so for what is a very big mandate, the resources that are currently available are perhaps not as significant or as great as they should be. There's also a significant degree of duplication of effort and resources, partly because the mandate is fragmented across three national departments and a number of provincial and local government agencies, but also because the volume of work is quite significant. With regard to the former, what typically happens is that primary agricultural produce responsibility lies with the Department of Agriculture, Forests and Fisheries. When it comes to processed products, the responsibility typically lies with DTI and Department of Health. So if you think about a food product as being part of a value chain, then in fact there are different government departments with different agencies, with different tiers of government involvement responsible for different points within a food value chain, which to some extent makes overall management of food safety issues in South Africa a bit more difficult than would otherwise be the case. Lastly, compliance on export products is rigorously enforced, as I'm sure honorable members are aware. PPECB and a number of other agencies are responsible for this. We know for certain that when table grapes or fresh fruit from South Africa arrives in the EU, it will be tested there, it will be checked there, and our produce and products are of a very high quality. The same can unfortunately not always be said of products and food products that land up on the South African consumer shelves. In some cases, there's relatively less control over imported products than we would like to see. In some cases, we are only aware of problems with imported products after a complaint has been made. We don't necessarily have as strong a proactive system to identify potential problems, particularly imports coming from the rest of the world. In conclusion, honorable members, we would suggest that there's perhaps more of a need to focus on food safety now than almost at any other time in the past for a number of reasons. Firstly, a key objective of the Industrial Policy Action Plan 2 is to lock in our exports, lock in our export markets where we are competitive and we're producing good export products, and secondly, to lock out unsafe imports. And I'm sure members will know that in the last few years we've had a significant trade deficit on our processed food trade of the order of 12 billion rand 2 or 3 years back. By doing this, we would also be developing a mechanism to promote local value addition to ensure that we create jobs in the local industry for South Africans. We also know that at the global level over the last couple of years, a number of high-profile product recalls have taken place. There are a couple of examples. Nestle, a few years back internationally, had to withdraw one or two of its products. We also know of the melamine case in China, where milk products were contaminated with melamine, a product recall, and some quite significant regulatory impacts were developed in China as a result of that particular case. In South Africa, we will, I'm sure, all remember the pineapple case, where fertilizer purchased from China was contaminated with cadmium and other heavy metals. It essentially wiped out our pineapple canning industry, as well as the pineapple industry at the fresh produce side in the Eastern Cape. And we're only now beginning to see that industry being put back on its feet. So the impact of potential food safety issues are not always felt only in the short term. They're also often felt in the medium to long term. As I mentioned already, we've also seen that imports of processed food in South Africa have been growing rapidly, and they are already significant. And so there are risks attached to a continuation of this trend. The risk of a potential food safety scare as a result of a processed import of product grows as the volume of imports grow in South Africa. So we would really suggest that perhaps now more than at any other time, we need to be thinking about food safety in a very broad sense, and how it is that we are going to ensure that South African consumers can buy produce in South Africa with confidence, knowing that the product has been manufactured to the highest specifications and does not contain anything that is either unsafe or that actually detracts from consumer welfare, because you're effectively paying more for a product that doesn't contain the core product that you're expecting. So buying chicken that is 20% water or brine, for example. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Thanks, Mr. Hannibal. Members, I'm sure you'll agree with me that this process that we're engaged in seemingly is opening up a whole can of worms on a whole variety of areas. But again, that is to be tested in our engagements. Mr. Pretorius, it's your turn.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you very much, honorable members, for allowing the opportunity for the Department of Health to share our views on the issue of the brining of chickens with the committee. I think, first of all, I need to mention that I am on my own here today. There is no other person from the Department of Health, so I have nobody else to introduce. I perhaps would like to also mention that some of the information I will be sharing with the committee will be maybe to some extent a duplication of what was shared already through the presentation, especially of Dr. Ntshabele, and I apologize for that. The information is coming from a report submitted to the Minister of Health at the end of December. This was as a result of the media statements or the media reports that started to appear in the newspapers and other media from about the middle of December. And I think I would like to first of all maybe just take it back a step to indicate that the legislation that we deal with is in terms of the Foodstuffs, Cosmetics and Disinfectants Act, Act 54 of 1972, whereby the Minister of Health has the authority to publish regulations to control aspects of amongst others, foodstuffs. The one issue that's been regulated in terms of this legislation is the issue of the thawing of foodstuffs, in other words, frozen foodstuffs that's been thawed. and then been further processed and then been frozen again. Specifically in the case of the chicken, as it was reported in the media. And maybe just as background information, our legislation currently makes provision for such practice to take place under certain circumstances. We have our regulations governing the general hygiene requirements for food premises and the transport of food, which indicates that in the event of a frozen product that's thawed, including frozen chicken, and which the surface temperature thereof has not exceeded 7 degrees Celsius, the foodstuff can be refrozen, provided that it's handled in accordance with good manufacturing practices and applicable to the specific situation. So I think we need to take note of it. These regulations I refer to as not specifically applicable to chicken, to frozen chicken, but it is applicable to frozen foodstuffs. And I think the issue around the brining of chicken, it came up in our discussions, in our investigations, that there is a situation where there are fresh chicken being brined, if we can call it like that, and in some instances there's also frozen chicken, locally produced as well as imported, which has also been sort of processed further through this technology. Now, specifically regarding the injection with brine, the Department of Health is currently not aware of any reasons from a food safety perspective. And maybe I can just later on indicate that we do have concerns from a public health perspective, but from a food safety perspective, we are not aware of any, health risks related to this specific technology. In fact, it was brought to our attention that the brining of chicken has been happening internationally for more than 25 years. It's been happening in South Africa for approximately 20 years. It was originally through a process referred to as vacuum tumbling, and then later on it was replaced by a process which includes or which entails the injection of the product. I think for us the most important aspect that came out from the recent media reports relates to the importance that consumers are informed that the products offered for sale to them have undergone such processing, in other words, being brined, to ensure that they are not misled in this regard. So for us, that was the issue. Currently, apart from maybe other public health related matters. And then this is the reason why we then, the Minister of Health specifically addressed this issue through the regulations relating to the labeling and advertising of foodstuffs, published March 2009, and which has already been mentioned, will come into effect 24 months after that date, which is on the 1st of March 2012. The new labeling and advertising regulations, generally referred to as R146. In these regulations, provision is made for a definition for brine, and it indicates that it means a solution of sodium chloride in water, where the solution is used for the curing, flavoring, and or preserving of a foodstuff. It is, in other words, not intended or added to chicken to increase the weight as such. Industry will indicate, if asked what is the purpose of this brining, and they indicated that it is to enhance the taste experience for consumers in terms of the texture of the specific portion of chicken, as well as the flavor, in other words, the taste of it. I think it's important to note that in addition to the regulations mentioned, the labeling and others, there's also many other regulations published under the Foodstuffs Act, and some of them are applicable to aspects such as preservatives, thickness, and so on. So what I'm saying is that the brine product itself should comply to all those other regulations. In other words, the ingredients that the brine consists of. In addition, R146 provides a definition for raw processed meat to be clear on the matter of what products we are referring to. We define in R146 three different, let's say, categories of meat. The one is unprocessed meat. The second is processed meat, which is products which such as cold meats, bolognese, and so on. And then the third category is raw processed meat, which distinguishes these products from processed meat. And provided is provided. There's, in other words, a distinction between raw processed meat and processed meat, which means raw meat products from all species of meat, animals, and birds intended for human consumption that has not undergone any heat treatment, and where any added ingredients and or additives and added water, including brine, is retained in or on the product as sold. So clearly the chicken products that we're discussing here today falls under this category in our labeling regulations referred to as raw processed meat products. Then thirdly, we make provision for what's also been mentioned, the issue of quantitative ingredient declaration, short referred to as QID, which is applicable, amongst others, to the presence of brine in raw processed chicken products. It means the quantitative ingredient declaration as a percentage of the meat content shall be indicated on the main panel, not as currently the practice where it's been indicated in the list of ingredients normally on the back panel of the product. But it should be indicated on the main panel of the product, labeled in bold capital letters at least 3 millimeters in height. In other words, not smaller, but it can be larger than 3 millimeters in height. And industry did indicate to us that they are sort of would like to discuss with us an increased letter size for the declaration of this information on the main panel. So it is, in other words, the opinion of DOH that the use of the mentioned technology, in other words, brining of chicken before freezing it again, as well as to distribute for human consumption, is not a transgression of any of the legislation of the department, and that this aspect will be adequately addressed once the new labeling and advertising regulations comes into effect on the 1st of March 2012, as far as preventing the consumers from being misled. I think it is also then, maybe in conclusion, important to mention that there are health concerns in terms of from a nutritional perspective, and that was also mentioned previously. First of all, consumers are not always aware that the product already contains salt, and that in some cases there are members of the public who need to be aware of this for the protection of their own health. In other words, there are people who need to lower their salt intake for specific health reasons. The second issue that we're concerned with is the fact that what was mentioned as value for money. And I think we fully agree that consumers are not aware that they, in fact, purchase a product of which the protein value of the product can be considered as being diluted. In other words, it's not what you expect to receive when you buy chicken which has not been brined. So you'll be, let's say, have less protein available in your diet than chicken which has not been treated. Chairperson, I think that's just sharing with the committee the background to the legislation, current legislation of the Department of Health. We are in full support of the Department of Agriculture's current initiatives, and we are directly participating in the process of where these chicken treated with brine for setting standards, specific standards for these products, and that be properly communicated through a public or consumer awareness program to prevent consumers from being misled. So in conclusion, thank you very much.
Well, whilst you are there, the report presented to the minister done by who?
This report was submitted in the format of a submission to the minister on the request of minister as a result of the first reports that appeared in the media around the issue of a specific chicken poultry manufacturer or processor. So I think we're all aware of what happened originally middle December, when there was a specific company being, let's say, targeted or being mentioned in the media. Although
is the report generated within the department?
Yes, no, this was just on the request of the minister, myself, the director of food control, submitted to the minister background information.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Members, that is a presentation on a subject matter that was that appeared in the media, which is quite which is quite unfortunate that matters of this magnitude have to appear in the media for us to be alerted of the magnitude of a problem, if I were to call it a problem. Of course, there are concerns having been raised in the public on the issues. Ourselves, being public representatives, we thought it wise that we should indeed convene a session of this nature and bring all the parties concerned with the matter in terms of both laws and regulations, so that we are able to get a fuller brief of what the issues are about. One other concern that I continue to have are the sets of regulations that we never get to be knowing about. That impact so much on the legislations that are there. One concern that I continuously raise is that these sets of regulations, either they take place in December time or behind the scenes, only to be informed that there is a set of regulation that governs aspects, certain aspects of any particular legislation, which has got far-reaching consequences that we are supposed to be in the know of. I am just not sure as to how we really get to go about on this particular one, to a point where I would imagine here members should agree with me that we should be indicated upon as and when any particular regulation is set in motion in terms of its preparation, so to speak, so that we are on par with what the department is doing on any particular, you know, piece of legislation to be followed by whatever regulation. Members, that is a presentation by the three departments, and I'm sure we have been taking some notes on the issues. I'm sure we have a few comments or questions that we need to field for the three panelists. Maybe just one last point. The regulatory body, is this the same as SABS? You still have SABS?
SABS is still there. This was the old, the NRCS was the old SABS regulatory division that was split by DTI from the SABS function by the NRCS Act in September 2008.
I'm correct to say, on the regulatory front of things, we are still talking about that SABS, but now transformed into this split.
Yes, so now we're known as the National Regulator for Compulsory Specifications, and we function independently from the SABS and the Standards Act function, yes.
Thanks. Members, Mr. Dutoy, I saw your hand. Mama Paliso.
Thank you, Chairperson. Today is your lucky day because I don't know if anybody here has ever been inside these processing plants, but I've worked with a company that slaughtered 3 million a week. That was in the 80s. So I'm well aware of the situation and how this we can solve this problem. Now, first of all, we have this problem of defrosting and reworking it. Now, this is a place where you slaughter chickens and you eviscerate them. So there's the intestines, obviously, is on the floor and in certain places. You have high pressure hoses washing down and brakes. You have iodine. You have a very very strict process. For instance, once you take this chicken, it's warm, and it's now been eviscerated, it's clean, it falls into a chlorine bath and spins out after 35 minutes. That's where the water pickup happens. The warm body temperature, the warm flesh takes in the water. It's 0 degrees almost, 1 degree. Now, once it comes out, it gets on a hang line. Some of them does bypass that and goes through a shower, cleaning shower. That does goes for fresh. The point I'm trying to make is right from the beginning until the end through this factory, the temperature goes down. Okay? I could judge by my breath. I could judge if the temperature gauge is correct. So the point is that you must never get a drop in temperature, because then spores are formed. If there's any bacteria and the temperature goes down, spores are formed. Now, spores are formed when the temperature goes up again, it explodes. There's explosion in population. So that's why you start at the front of the factory and you go back, and by the time you're packing it, it's 5 degrees in the factory. Your holding room for fresh is 0 degrees. Your holding rooms are minus 28 degrees, and it's getting frozen, it's minus 40. So I know what those temperatures are. I've worked in those conditions. So I would suggest that we must not contemplate reworking this, because once you get this dip, and there were any bacteria in a chicken, once you thaw it, you must cook it. Because if there's any bacteria, the spores will explode. And if you freeze it, the spores will bring forth bacteria. But once you freeze it again, you bring the temperature down, this organism goes into protection mode and it forms spores. So every time you have this different shift in temperatures, you get an explosion, exponential explosion of population. So I would say we should be very strict on this temperature situation. Okay? The second one is the weight. Now, how are we going to measure what is the weight that the consumer is getting? Now, it's very easy. When the load is coming in, they take samples on the farms, and they think that the chickens are coming in an average weight of, say, 1.5 or 1.6, whatever. Now, once that chicken has been dressed, in other words, the intestine is out, the feet is cut off, the head is cut off, and all those things are cut off and cut out, it starts to run on a hang line. And this hang line you can weigh. In those days, we had a system, it was called the chickweigh system. Now, it weighs the shackle, everything, the chicken. It runs over a few weigh bridges, as we called it, and it weighs the shackles, everything. And when you drop the chicken off later on, even if it's meters down the line, that thing is so computerized that it can weigh the shackle and the wheels that chicken was hanging on. So you can imagine that every chicken is weighed individually, and you can see by the end of the day what is the weight that you're getting according to the incoming weight, live weights. Now, why did we do this? Obviously for cost control and all those things, but also because there's certain orders that's got to be taken. For instance, the Finger Licking Good Company, they want chickens in a certain weight range. Why? Because they cut into portions, and the portions can't be smaller than one than the other. So they have a narrow weight range. So this is what this system is built into the weighing system. Now, on different points in the factory, you can weigh the chicken. and you can have the output, the total output of this factory you can have, and the input on certain stages. You can have the input weight on all the chickens over a year, over 6 months, or whatever. You can have this weight recorded before there's brine or water or anything going on that chicken, while it's still hanging there, steaming from heat, because it's just been slaughtered 5 minutes ago. The body weight, the body temperature is still 37 degrees. So, and then you can weigh it, and every stage you can weigh this, and you can record this. We did it. The systems are there, and that was 20, 30 years ago. And then on the end, when it's packaged and it's out of the frozen, all those things are so strictly done because the customer demands the weight because he pays for it. You have a fantastic fine-tuning on incoming weight and outgoing weight. Now, that's also a problem. Now, if we have regulations and say, okay, here we have a factory, they are allowed to put out plus 8% water pickup or whatever, or they have a brine, and they say, we're putting brine on, say, 20% of our chickens, and that gives us so much, the sums must add up. It's easy. It can be introduced. Now, the third point I want to make, that's the final one, the third point I want to make is, how do we control this? How do we monitor and control this? Now, we have three factories slaughtering 60% of the chickens in South Africa. So you're talking about not a million of them. So you're talking about a small complement of staff that you need to be trained and to inspect this on a regular basis. The man from the Finger Licking Good Company came there every day, and he was checking the quality and the weights and taking samples. He was the quality controller, but from outside. That's the same we must do. We must have an inspector. Now, if we are afraid that we won't find an official that won't be bribed, okay, just to check the weight output we're talking about here, the weight output, okay, to monitor this, then get somebody from the consumer, NGOs or whatever, and use these people to monitor this. There's only a few plants in South Africa, a dozen maybe, I don't know. But this is my solution to the problem. Thank you.
I was not even sure whether you belong there or you belong here.
Lucky
Day. That's what Lucky Day, you know, talks to. thanks, Dr. Tutoi, Mr. Tutoi. We have Mrs. Paliso, Dr. Bosman, Mrs. Twala Nkosi Cebekhulu, and Mrs. Nyalungu.
Thank you, Chairperson.
In that order.
Thank you for all this presentation. Chairperson, this is a matter of a worrying factor for the public. From where I'm sitting, it's very clear. Government departments are working in silos. There is no intergovernmental relations implemented here or coordinated. It's very clear. My first question will be, and I think, Chairperson, you have already alluded to that one, if media did not inform us, we are members, how long should this have been continuing and continue without us knowing that the public is misled by public sector, even those who are in government business? Because how did we end up here as a country, informed as members that it is a practice of how many years ago? Why was it not changed? Why were Parliament not informed that we want to change act, we want to change this? Because Parliament can do that, if Parliament is well informed. Chairperson, to me, is the monitoring tools is a matter of importance, but we have to be informed what tools are already in place. What we are given here is future plans, what is going to happen in the future. But what is happening now? I think the public is not safe. How do government want to enforce private sector while government cannot enforce themselves working in an integrated manner? How do you want to regulate private sector if you can't regulate yourself? So for me, it brings me to what is the communication strategy that is in place for the department and also for the public? And how regularly they have to tell us how regularly are they going to communicate to the public? I can see there is an awareness process, they put an awareness process in place, but when is that going to happen? And how? The how part. Because we've got rural areas, people who are less informed than those in the urban areas. And why do we have most, the importation of food is growing in South Africa, while we are sitting with surplus, especially of chicken, in our country. But the import is growing. It's again an indication of how people are working in silos. Because if people were work in an integrated manner, we will not be sitting with the importation of food that is growing and even inheriting more brine-injected chickens from outside. Chairperson, the last one is they have to come and tell us in future pieces in detail what are the monitoring tools in place if they don't have it now. We want to be well informed because people in the constituencies are already not so sure are they getting value for money under the watch of our department saying that we do have regulations. We do have institutions in place. We are institutionalized, but people are not sure are they safe. Food safety is not a thing that you can say that, no, I will put this I will put this system in place by 15 years. Food is an everyday thing. We are eating chickens every day. Chairperson, I'm not going to make long talks and presentations and questions. The questions are few because there is no work that has been done to save the country from this happening. How many more things are happening without us knowing as portfolio committee members? Thanks, Chair.
Postman?
Chair, thank you. I think I will be short because I think the other speakers, my colleagues, have already raised their concerns around it. But if I can come back, and I think it has been mentioned, and I want to thank the departments for bringing the presentations to us to make it quite clear of what and how many of regulations and acts are concerned. And I'm also worried about the quantity of these acts, you know, not really being dovetailed. But I think, let me just put it shortly. First of all, the people out there, the users, want value for money. And through this process that has happened and the public attention that was given to the last couple of months, I would very much also like to hear, was there any transgression of these rules detected in the issues that were investigated? Because we got all the background and the history and to say how what has happened and what has happened, what has to be done, but not what has happened. And I would like to see and hear if they have really detected people transgressing on the packaging as well. Okay, the labeling, unfortunately, we know that that is only coming into action on in a year's time. But unfortunately, I think, you know, this is one of those issues that should have been addressed very long ago, because the public out there are all not always aware of what they're buying. And I think if you look at the international markets, and I think that is the other thing that I would like to say, when it comes to the international market, there are rules and regulations in place which we have to apply to when we export. But when it comes to local standards, we don't just seem to don't care. And you know, let these things happen, which is not in good state, standing for our local health. Is there, for instance, a role to play for local health inspectors? Do they go out there, take samples, have salmonella and other bacterial counts done on these samples that they take? And what is the finding of it? I mean, surely, if we can now come and say that, okay, we must put the brine in, and we sort of protected from having, getting infected. But as my colleague has explained, I mean, we know that in defrosting and in the process of defrosting, it is a very, very dangerous situation to refroze it again. And then also the other question that I would like to pose is in connection with the labeling of the use before dates. I find it very interesting that nothing is said in these papers about the use before date. And once they repack those chicken, they put a new use before date on it. Is that feasible in terms of the regulations, and how do we control and work around it? I think, I don't want to really go into it very much more as to say that my worry is that, and it's also stated in the presentation, is that we've got too little experts, too little people that can control and go out and inspect, and then obviously a drain in of our, what do you call it, expert people in the different departments, and then also the other colleague has spoken about it, not the different departments not having a committee or a standard procedure of working together on regulating these issues. Thank you, Chair.
Mama Kala, followed by Nkosi Tebekulu, and then by Mama Nyalungu.
Thank you, Chair. My colleagues have already alluded some of the questions I had. As we have just indicated, that if it was not for media, how would we know about this crisis in the chicken industry? I'm thinking of those millions who can't afford expensive meat, who are living on this chicken, and some of them, the health state doesn't allow them to take this much salt on daily basis. So I'm asking myself, where were the inspectors? Are there no more inspectors, health inspectors, in the Department of Health? Another concern I have, Mr. Nshabele, is you talk of the concentration that you are conducting. There's a commission that is conducting that analysis. Will you forward that report to this committee? We would like to know, because we are already aware that there, besides salt, there are other products. There are other things that are added there in this injection. And that this brine injection in South Africa has got more content than of the other countries. There are elements of certain injections that are added there. So we'd like to know, we're interested to know that analysis. So I think Chairperson.
You done, ma'am? You done?
Yes.
Okay. Nkosi.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think one would be tempted to hammer on one and the same concern, as my colleagues, other members have raised, the issue of having left the consumers of our country for quite so long without not being informed so that they could maybe have choices. I would not, Chairperson, now would like to stick on the concerns, but, you know, there's one statement that one would come up with, is that for quite some time, or for quite a long time, South Africans have been used as a dumping site to consume all this treated chicken meat. Maybe if one may go further than focusing on the presentation, Chairperson, but it's, I feel it's part of it. When one looks at the sale or taking off the chicken to the consumers, live chicken to the consumers in the pay point, I understand one would have to maybe pose a question on that. When one looks at the presentations, it does show that maybe the departments have just taken a position now to see to it maybe there is something that they'll do to protect the consumers. But on the side of those farmers who sell live chicken to our people, more especially in the pay points, if one looks at those, understand they are fed to be ready for a sale at least 6 weeks but it's a very short space of time that these chickens are sort of fed so that they could grow and go out to market. And has the departments have ever looked at looking at that as well? Because I understand there's a lot that needs to be looked into with regards to the size of those chicken that are sold and their life as well. Because I understand there are some, what would one call, there would be some sort of remains in their blood that result in some sort of side effects to those who consume them. I think, Chairperson, that's the only point or a new point that one could raise in order to see to it maybe that our people out there are looked after by government departments. I thank you.
Thank you,
Chair. As my colleagues have already said what I was going to say, my only question is that in some years back, we were used to see some food inspectors getting in each and every shop, checking the expired tin stuffs. But if I can see nowadays, there's no such. So I want to check if ever there is a shortage of that monitoring or shortage of the inspectors. Or what? Because especially in the rural areas, even if the media can say something in the newspaper, they don't have such access to such information. So I want to know what criteria are you using to inform those people, especially in the rural areas? Thank you.
The very last point raised by Mama Nyalungu also talks to the very recent, I think it was last week or week before last, where in one shop, you know, there was quite a huge chunk of, you know, food, expired food being sold. Wondering as to how many of such do we have in the country and the tools of monitoring of such that we have as government. It raises such concerns
whether we have any, you know, such monitoring tools, and especially in the rural communities, where the levels of, you know, awareness and education are very low, to a point where people literally just get anything. Ah, it's fine. You know, that's generally how black people get to be. Ah, it's fine. You know, and finding ourselves in serious trouble as time goes. Now, a matter related to health inspectors, I guess, would also talk very much to this issue. I thought one also would hear, among others, a question that asks, what is the current status? Because we did not hear anything from any of the panelists in terms of the levels of brain injection. I see in your presentation, Dr. Ntshavheli, on page 3, the maximum water pickup talks about allowable is 8% as far as the regulations are concerned. Whether that also talks to, I'm not too sure whether it's the same as your brain injection levels. Are you saying it is 8% in the country as we speak now? Because my understanding also says we are anything between 25 to 60%. My information tells me such as we speak currently in the country. And again, also the matter is, this is an area which is not regulated, unless I'm informed otherwise. And I would also be very keen to get a sense of knowing about the worldwide norm. Whatever that means, obviously you're going to get countries having varied, you know, degrees, like Venezuela would have this much compared to USA, and so on and so forth. I'm just concerned as to the 24-month period that the industry has requested for the effecting of the food labeling and advertising regulation. Now, the issues are urgent for us to say 24 months, of course, as of then. Now, here you're talking about next year, March 1st. I would be quite keen to see a much more urgent attention being given to such than the 24 months. Of course, we're now almost one year, so to speak, which is 12 months. I was also, you know, interested on the research done by ARC that is almost out. You have your preliminary report, you did mention, hence I'm saying almost out. And again, one of the members did ask about, you know, a presentation of such outcomes, you know, to our committee. Obviously, this is a matter that is of concern to all of us, and I guess also to the public. This is not going to be the first time that we only conclude on these matters today. This is obviously a matter that is going to continue being with us for the next foreseeable future, as we are certainly keen to understand and follow and monitor any progress in the matter that is upon us. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honourable Members. Indeed, you raise very pertinent questions with regards to this matter. And I will try at best to respond to some of them. Some of them clearly require further engagement with yourselves in terms of, for instance, if I speak with regards to the research specifically, in the presentation we have indicated that we are expecting the results at the end of April of this year. We have also sent the report for the minister's noting and approval, and we would gladly, I think, come and give a presentation of the either the interim report or the finished report, depending on your schedule, and then we can share that with yourselves. With regards to food safety in broad terms, I would like to make the following points. And globally, it has also been learned that the old approach of endpoint inspection is not effective, which is what we are currently practicing, because it assumes that you are using inspections to build food safety into a product, whereas the product is handled throughout the value chain, as my colleague later mentioned. What that means is that you would still not achieve the level of protection that you want for your consumers if you follow solely the approach of endpoint inspections with regards to food. And therefore, we are looking at a new approach wherein you have hygiene management systems at each production level that are then audited to manage food safety. In other words, from feed, if you think about a chicken as a product of a day-old chicken that has been fed, therefore the issue of feed safety becomes an issue. Therefore, only doing endpoint inspection, you miss the point with regards to what one honorable member mentioned with regards to residues at the end, because you'll only be looking at the chicken itself. So we are looking at the whole value chain and saying each, whether it's a manufacturer of food, whether it's the producer of the old chickens, whether it's the grower, whether it's the abattoir, needs to have a food safety management system. And that is what I think my colleague was referring to in terms of harmonizing food safety legislation in the country, whether under one food safety agency or not. The issue of dovetailing regulations, when we presented, we've said that we've already formed a subcommittee that works together on this issue. We have perhaps erred on our part in that when realizing the problem, we did not communicate it to yourselves. We had sought to further understand the problem better with the hope that we can then determine appropriate measures to put in place in terms of regulations. And I think it's something that we have learned today, and perhaps we can make improvements on our side, that when there are issues of this nature, that we need to share them with yourselves before we proceed and make changes to legislation. And I hope that we would not make similar mistakes in the future, especially on issues of this nature. But be that as it may, we are at the tail end of this process. We're hoping that we will finalize this research with the ARC by the end of April, and then we'll come and share the results. And out of that result, we'll also build through a strategy as to how we are going to communicate the new regulations. Because in the end, it is the consumer who chooses which product to purchase. And it is only when they are well informed that they make better choices and reject products that do not conform with the regulations they know or their own requirements from a choice point of view. And I think that is very important, that we need to strengthen that arm to ensure that consumers are well informed, myself, yourselves, and ordinary men and women of South Africa are able to know what is a good product and what is a product that is inferior or that is improperly labeled and therefore misleading to them. In the case of the company that led to this issue, we did an inspection, and clearly there were a number of transgressions, and these were handled at that specific plant through corrective actions. What we then do is that we send a team of inspectors to the plant. They go and do an inspection in terms of compliance with regulations, and the end product is that an instruction is given for the plant to correct certain practices. And I think that is still going on. Some of them were in the short term, some of them are in the long term. I am told that they have also decided to stop completely with the exercise, but I cannot confirm that. That is what I've heard, that they've decided not to proceed and continue with that, practice. We hope that out of this lesson, as a department, we can then look at having proactive mechanisms that we can bring into place in terms of periodic surveys for all other products that can tell us in advance of potential problems in our food safety system, so that we don't get to the point where this becomes first in the media before it is out there, and that we have reacted appropriately as a department. I think the sanctions that were meted out to this company were appropriate, and we are looking at closing those actions that were put in place, and hopefully then we can proceed as normal. And therefore, in terms of the rest of the country, Chair, our inspections from the Department of Agriculture, from the Directorate of Agricultural Products Inspection Services, we are enforcing the law at all the points where we have inspectors. Unfortunately, we do not have agricultural inspectors at all the points throughout the country. But we have, in the last 2 weeks, had a number of our inspectors going out and enforcing the 8%. But clearly we are aware that we are lagging international practice, because our regulation only permits this insofar as a whole carcass is concerned. In other words, it is legal to do this on portions. I can remember,
are you saying it is only 8% that is allowed
on carcasses? It is not allowed on portions. It is allowed on full carcasses, the 8%. Yes. We are aware that, like I said, Chair, we are lagging international practice in that respect, in that the practice is worldwide phenomenon. I think I can recall at this point in time, as you're asking, that the number that is close to my mind is a 12% that is allowed by the U.S. in terms of water pickup. That is the only figure that I have at the top of my head at this point in time. But I think one of the things that takes place in our research is that they need to do a literature study, which would then also indicate further what are practices in other parts of the world. I think the other questions would really resort with my colleague from health, and if you allow me, I'll hand over to you. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think quite a number of issues came up, and I'm not sure if it'll be possible to address them all in full detail, but I'm going to focus on those which I think was mentioned, let's say, as a concern by a number of the committee members. The first issue is the issue of health inspectors, and maybe I think it's important to provide some background on this. Today, they are referred to as environmental health practitioners. The term health inspectors is not being used any longer in terms of the relevant Health Professions Council legislation. However, the EHPs, or the environmental health practitioners, are employed within the health sector, within the national health system. They are employed by the 9 provincial health departments, as well as by the 52 municipalities responsible for municipal health services. Those 52 municipalities are the 6 metros and then the 46 district municipalities. They have the responsibility for provincial health, responsibility for port health, and included in that is then the monitoring of imported foodstuffs, which sorts under the health legislation. For municipal health services, the EHPs employed by the municipalities are, amongst others, responsible for food control. Because municipal health services consists of a list of elements, which includes, amongst others, issues also related to pest control, chemical safety, communicable disease control, and so on. So only one of those elements are food control. And I think that's important maybe to note that we don't have within the health system any category referred to as a food inspector. They are not specifically dealing only with the food legislation or with aspects related to food control. In other words, we refer to the EHPs as general practitioners. They are not specialists in terms of something like, for instance, food inspection. I want to further mention that it was indicated, I think the chair mentioned, that nobody mentioned anything about the date, expiry dates, or what we refer to as date markings on the foodstuffs, because that was also a big issue in the relevant reports in the media. I think it's again important, and I will get back to the chair's concern about the date for the implementation of the new labeling regulations. But first of all, I want to mention that these regulations also now for the first time indicate that a date should be provided on foodstuffs. Up to now, let's say, technically speaking, up to the end of February next year, there's no legislation requiring a date on a foodstuff. In other words, those dates have been put on products where we, let's say, become aware of them on the shelves. Those have been put on the product voluntarily by the manufacturer. That's the first point we need to know understand that the date is placed there by the manufacturer. There's no legislation determining or indicating how that date's been determined. So from the in the new labeling regulations, there is provision made for then the requirement to request or to require dates on foodstuffs. And we basically distinguish between what's referred to as best before date for perishable products which has been processed for long shelf life, things such as maybe biscuits and sweets and so on, because they're not perishable foodstuffs. They will be required to have a best before date on. But then for perishable foodstuffs, such as the chicken, for instance, a use by date is required. So I'm not sure if you would allow me and maybe just to quickly share the definitions of the dates, because in the case of the best...
Chairperson? Yes, Chairperson. The Department of Health cannot share even more information for us because they didn't even bring a hard copy of a presentation. And we have allowed them, we were tolerant, so that they can address us without a hard copy of a presentation. So there cannot be something read again for us further in this meeting by the Department of Health while we do not have information, because in the beginning of the meeting, our secretary said that we will only get the information on a hard copy after the meeting. This is not right. We are not accepting that. And we know what is environmental health practitioners. We come from a local government. They are not picking up these issues at the shelves of the shops. We know exactly what are their job descriptions. And one of our members did ask about, do they have the capacity? And that question is not answered. That is the capacity in the departments to deal with this matter adequately. Yes, we hear about the committee, but we want to know, is there a permanent inspector that are working consistently on this?
Let's allow Mr. Pretorius to conclude on this point. Because one of the issues that is consistently there within departments, especially the department that we deal with, which is agriculture, some of these competences, whilst you have them on your budget, in terms of their implementation, they take place in provinces, like we are hearing now, also in local government. And for you, it ends there. You don't make an effort in getting to monitor. Give an example, CASP, Comprehensive Agriculture Support Program. We're always told that that is a matter residing in provinces, and it ends there. We never get any feedback about the implementation of all of those kinds of things. That is a similar response that we're getting from you, Mr. Pretorius. Hence the reaction from one of our members here. That it is a matter that is in some municipalities or whatever number, in the provinces, whatever number, and so on and so forth. And it ends there. So we have a similar kind of response, if you don't mind concluding, because our interest is more about monitoring such implementation.
Thank you, Chair, and my apology for maybe not giving the information as expected by the committee member concerned. I apologize for that. Maybe just to inform the committee that I was by telephone informed Friday afternoon very late for the first time. The letter for inviting my DG to this meeting was dated Friday afternoon. I only then received the request. There was no opportunity to discuss it with anybody else, and therefore I apologize for not having a presentation available. I will also not thank you very much. I think the date marking issue is, in other words, maybe a discussion on its own. I will also then, what I wanted to mention with regard to the available EHPs in the country, there's an indication that as a result of, let's say, first of all, they are not dealing only with food, so they have many issues, and I think those that work in local authority is aware of that. But we also have a situation where there's probably only about 50% of the EHPs available. We have around 2,500 registered with the Health Professions Council, and based on the South African population figures, we need probably in the region of about 5,000 to 6,000 environmental health practitioners. So yes, I think we need to acknowledge that there is, in other words, a challenge in terms of the availability of resources. But there are EHPs employed by most of the municipalities, the 52 that I referred to. I think maybe an important point is that, I do take, let's say, acknowledge the fact that within the National Health System, our National Health Act makes provision, as it was accepted by Parliament, it makes provision for the functions related to environmental health to be, let's say, a national competency, and then in addition the 9 provincial health departments as well as the 52 municipalities. So that is currently the constitutional framework within which we work. I also fully agree with the Chair that we are, in other words, not supposed to say, but it's the provinces and the municipalities, and then think we have no further responsibility. I think in the end of the day, the Minister of Health is responsible for everything that happens within the national health system. However, because of challenges in terms of resources, human as well as financial, we do not at the moment in a position to give full details in terms of what's happening within provinces, what's happening within municipalities. That system for monitoring their activities, the information system to support that, has been a challenge for the last, let's say, probably 10 years to implement. Mr. Chair, I'm not sure if you want me to mention something about the extension of the date for the labeling regulations, because that was, in other words, extended from the 1st of March 2011 to 2012 as by the Minister of Health, amongst others as a result of the food industry indicating that they will not be able to comply fully. Our new labeling regulations is a document, approximately 100 pages. This whole issue of date markings, brining of chicken, is probably less than a page of this document. So it's very extensive, and the industry did indicate that they have challenges in terms of administrative as well as logistical issues for them to be able to comply by the 1st of March 2011. So that was the reason why an extension was provided by the minister.
As you respond, if it is all possible that we could also just illustrate for us as to what typically could be contained in a label.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I'd like to touch on a few of the comments and questions that came from honourable members, and I think the first one is the integration issue that the honourable member crossed to me raised, and I think she's hit the head, she's hit the nail on the head, as the saying goes. I think in times of crisis or disaster, then government departments work together very closely, and there's little space for dilly-dallying. We need to deal with particular issues, but I think from a proactive perspective, it would be remiss of us not to admit that there are improvements that the three departments could make to improve the degree to which we work together, the degree to which we interact to address problems before they reach the media. It should not be the situation that we read about problems in our industries from a newspaper or a news report. We should be aware of these problems before they reach that level, and we should be tracking potentially high-risk sectors a bit more extensively and a bit more carefully than perhaps the three departments are doing at the moment. And it's clearly a collective responsibility. It's not any single department that is remiss in this particular area. I think all three departments need to work more intensively in this area. So I think we do have to acknowledge that. In terms of the question that I think came from you, Chair, around whether there have indeed been transgressions and what the potential uptake of water has been, there's an investigation that the NRCS is undertaking at the request of our colleagues from the Department of Agriculture, Forests and Fisheries. I don't believe that the investigation is complete yet, so that we don't have definitive information yet. But I think there's enough indications for us to have the view that with the best information that we have available before us at the moment, it's quite likely that the degree of transgression is above the 8% allowable level that health and departments of health and agriculture have indicated. My colleague from DAF has also indicated that for chicken portions, it's in fact not allowed at all. The initial research suggests that it is happening and that the levels are above the 8%. So we do have an issue to deal with. There's clearly a problem that's going to need to be addressed. And with your permission, Chair, if my colleagues from the NRCS would like to make a comment in this area, perhaps we can we can ask them to do so. Lastly, Chair, I think it's important that we understand the, and it's an issue that I did raise in my presentation. It's an area where mandates are overlapping, where there's elements of duplication. There's also lack of clarity about precisely who is responsible for particular issues. Now, the National Regulator for Compulsory Specifications, let me just mention to the committee, in the food area is responsible for three things essentially. It's responsible for fish, it's responsible for meat, and it's responsible for trade metrology. Now, what we've been discussing with our colleagues at the NRCS for quite a while is whether we need something along the lines of a regular assessment of the extent to which when a retailer or manufacturer says you're buying a 700-gram or an 800-gram loaf of bread, is it actually 700 or 800 grams? And I'm sure honorable members will know that in the course of last year, a number of bakeries in the Western Cape were found to actually be supplying underweight bread. Now, we would like the NRCS to undertake a six-monthly survey, an actual set of investigations of a number of retailers, number of processors, to actually establish for a range of basic food products. Because for us, this is about poor people. It's about poor people not being ripped off by unscrupulous processors, producers, or retailers. Making sure that when a poor consumer buys a loaf of brown bread, it is 700 grams or 800 grams, whatever it's labeled to be. And there are standards in this area. So we've been talking to our NRCS colleagues about this. We hope that within the next month or two, we'll reach agreement on the size of the list of food products that will be investigated, and that there will be a regular six-month report back to the Portfolio Committee on Trade and Industry, and potentially also the Portfolio Committee on Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, of the extent to which producers and retailers in South Africa actually comply with the Trade Metrology Act and regulation. So I know it perhaps comes too late to give real comfort, but it's certainly something that's on the agenda for the department. So we will be undertaking that shortly. Chair, with your permission, perhaps we can ask the NRCS to speak on the issue as well.
Sorry. Thanks for giving us the opportunity to speak. Just to explain maybe in terms of the Trade Metrology Act, and I will give over to my colleague that is in the technical area where they're actively doing the enforcement of the Trade Metrology Act. In terms of our mandate and the products that we do inspect for Trade Metrology, we go by the principle that we call 80-20, where we try to focus our attention on the value chain before it reaches the marketplace. We are, as was explained in terms of the other colleagues from departments, we are understaffed in terms of inspectors in the marketplace. That's why we try to focus more on the release before it reaches the actual shelves, to go to manufacturing premises, to go at the point just before it's released into the marketplace to be spread throughout the country, because then it becomes a very vast area that needs to be inspected. You need to build the quality, the trade, metrology requirements, all requirements into the product before it reaches the shelf. It must be inspected with the principal. It must be, if you pick up something at the stage where you in the marketplace and you've taken it from the shelf, it indicates that's already been a failure much higher up in the value chain. So the focus in terms of our resources as well and the risk that there is to the consumer, the principle, as my colleague from agriculture also said, with foodstuffs especially, is that you must see to it that that product that needs to be safe and quality in terms of foods actually, when it leaves the manufacturing premises, when it comes into the country where it's imported, at the point of import, it must there be controlled. To actually have inspectors at retailers actually will not solve the problem as such. Although we do the 20% refers to that, where you actually have inspectors that does market surveillance to see that what eventually reaches the marketplace, that there is not a failure. But we must focus our energy on those stuffs not reaching the marketplace at all. It must be stopped before it reaches the consumers, before they can take it from the shelves. In terms of the project that we're running, in terms of the Trade Metrology Act, we look at packaging. So we actually do not control what goes into the product. But what we see as being added to the outside of the product and to the packaging material of the product. And for that, in terms of the project that we're assisting with, I would like to ask my colleague from Trade Metrology to just explain briefly of what's been found in terms of that, if you'll allow him to do that. Thanks.
Chairperson and honourable members, I think I'll start with whole chickens. Also, to just add, to monitor this process, we had to reverse engineer the whole process. So we worked from the principle that after chilling, we've weighed the chicken, then monitored how much injection went into the chicken or the poultry. Then we also monitored after the cooling process, and then again monitored the thawing process. If we look at whole frozen chickens, after the chilling process and injection, we found on average a 7% pickup in weight. Then after the cooling process, the retention or the retained weight was 10% increase from the start weight. And then after thawing, we found that on average 7% of the weight was retained within the poultry pieces. Then when we looked at the chicken pieces, now we've heard the speakers saying that it should not be injected. We actually found the following. After the chilling and injection process, we found chicken to be 33% on average at 9 manufacturers heavier through injection. After the freezing and glazing process, on average they retained 29% of the weight, of the original weight. And then after thawing, we found the chicken pieces to be 19%. Or a 19% or increase in weight. I must say that even in individual circumstances, we found pickup up to 50% just on injection. So it is a serious problem. Thank you.
You would agree with me that this easily could be a matter of national security for the state, easily. I'm aware that I could be blowing it out of proportion. I could be risking also being called a security freak, if you like. But if matters of this nature left in the hands of yourselves are matters that we only could pick up in the media without being alerted, and then it becomes a serious problem. The kinds of issues that could be coming out of such processes, you know, of a brine injection, are matters that are of a serious nature. This day and age, we are informed of other potential health risks or health hazards. Whether, you know, you're going to see any person, you know, growing big tummies, you know, at times we are told it is your GMOs, whether this also does not have any such contributions as such. Now, these are the kinds of issues that are of serious concern to us. I mean, here we are told of people who are diabetic, who are not supposed to be taking any such quantities of salt. And as such, therefore, you have such chicken being injected with high levels of salt and the dangers that it does to those categories of people who are diabetic. And this day and age also typically, you know, especially among, you know, these black people of ours in this country, you know, before you eat anything, you have a salt that you have to throw all over, not knowing whether the amount of salt in the food you are going to be eating is enough or not. It has become accustomed to a number of us, you know, that you throw, you know, some salt in your food. Now, these are the kinds of issues that we are dealing with. Now, we are also informed here that we have a number of our products in Thailand, for instance, our fruits has been banned there, I think, for the past 2 years. And also our wool has been banned in China. There are processes that are trying to unlock the logjam out there because of the Rift Valley fever in China. Now, we seem to be just getting everything and anything without really getting to apply much monitoring from our side of stories, of things, so that we are able to say, no, not this one, but that one. Now, those are the kinds of issues that we find ourselves in out of this whole process. As I was saying, we have started a process. We are going to be monitoring. Of course, we did not invite the consumer organizations. I would have imagined that they were supposed to be here so that because they monitor some of these processes themselves. I'm sure they certainly have, you know, stories or two to tell. But as we move forward, we might also have to reach that point wherein we go on some hearing of sort, again, on this very matter. So this is a matter of national importance for our country. Do we still have a few hands still on the same subject matter? You're going to be less than a minute?
Yes.
We're counting. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. The figures that you mentioned for me is actually quite shocking. look, going back to the situation that I described where I came from, if you look at fresh chicken, this fresh chicken goes with a hang line through an ice-cold shower, which is chlorinated water. Then it gets dried by blowing for a while, so it dries it down. So if this process is enough, in fact, remember, this then goes through the plant, okay, it's getting cut up, it's getting processed, and then it gets packed, pre-priced, and goes into the chilling room. So if this shower is good enough for fresh chicken, which is the most critical one, then dropping it into the chlorine bath for half an hour and getting the pickup, the water pickup, okay, this was 20 years ago, 20-30 years ago of technology. And I can't remember that anybody then got sick. You know? Those systems worked. So first of all, I don't buy the idea that you need the injection to preserve the food. I mean, the foodstuff. That is, for me, not logical. If some medical person, maybe, Laurie, you've got some chemical experience, explain this to me, I would be able to enter into a conversation about it. But it doesn't seem logic to me. Now, the other thing that is claimed is that it's not for weight pickup, but it's for enhancing taste. I'm sorry. We all know that if you want to buy a chicken and you want it tasty, you put it in the fridge, for 12 hours or 6 hours in a nice marinade, or you cook it the other way and you spice it and you do your normal thing. Now, why must the producer decide for the consumer how the chicken must taste? I mean, aren't we selling fresh stuff? You know, there's a lot of suspicion for me as a member of the public. Extension of the public to think why would we buy this argument? It's not for wet pickup, and it's for preservation and for taste. I think we should go into this, because that is the matter, and that is why I suggested that if we as a state or you as a departments could introduce a system where you have a 3 or 4 checkpoints on the weight scales, you only have to inspect the printouts. You only have to verify that there's not been tampered with. Then you can draw a graph on each factory or each company's output from in to out, and you will have an average water pickup. And if you've set, or we, or who, what they call, we the public, or you, the department, has set the standards, and that factory exceeds its average standards, because look, they're not making money on one batch of going out. They're making money on the whole batch over the year. So if they transgress on that levels that we've set, that's those boundaries, then obviously we must step in with the right. So for me, it's a very simple solution to this. But I think it will be hard to buy those arguments. Thank you.
I take it we are done with the questions. That was a comment from Mr. Troy. I guess being policymakers, obviously not being technocrats ourselves, but if we have any technocrats among ourselves, all the better in really enhancing our understanding of the issues. Maybe the issue raised by Mr. Dutoy bears a question that says, is it not about maximization of profits than the taste we talk about here, that we are talking about? Maximization of profits here talks to me about the very issues you are raising. Because of the water content through the injection, you have now a chicken weighing 2 kgs all of a sudden, and the water levels within that chicken being 40%, for argument's sake. And clearly here you are selling 1.6 kilograms of chicken for a sum of whatever, X number of rands. Is it not more of a matter of maximizing of profits than the taste we are talking about from the industry point of view?
I don't know how to answer your question directly, Chair, but I will try. When we agreed to the 80%, it was to the fact that meat sometimes is very tough when it's cooked, and therefore to make it tender, you would marinate or you could inject stuff to make it softer. And that is where the 8%, I think, came from. But clearly, without adequate controls, it went from that to worst-case scenarios of 50-60%. I cannot at this point confirm what the intention was, except to say that it is beyond the scope of our regulations. And it is that which we are trying to address, to say that the consumer must know what is allowed. The consumer must be allowed to make the choice by having that declaration in terms of 146 of the Department of Health, that if in this case there's 40% meat and 60% water, the consumer needs to be informed as such by the chicken producer, and he or she must choose which brand to buy out of the different.
I also raised a question earlier on about the unpacking of the labeling. What goes through that label? If you can also include that in your response as well.
Thank you, Chair. First, I would like to first respond to the issue that we're now discussing on whether this is all just about making money. immediately after this whole issue was sort of published in the media, I did myself go to the well-known supermarkets, the retailers, to see what's on the shelf and what do they indicate. And there I myself observed that if you look at what they refer to as the 2 kilogram chicken portion packets, which is the individually quick frozen chicken, which we now focus on around the brine. If you look at that chicken's list of ingredients on the back panel, they in fact declare that the contents of that packet is less than 100% chicken. The ones that I saw, the one indicated in the list of ingredients chicken, and then immediately after the term chicken, it shows in brackets 70%. The other one showed chicken and in brackets 80%. So there was already a quality difference in terms of what the one retailer was selling and what the other one was. That indicated already to me now involved in this issue that the remainder of that product is not what I would, let's say, assume to be just chicken. It's something else that's been added to it. And when you then read the rest of the ingredients, they actually declare the brine. They show in brackets also the composition of the brine. So let's say, strictly speaking, if we really want to point it out, they did declare it in the list of ingredients. However, our new regulation states that it should be declared much more clearly on the front panel so that the consumer is made aware of it. The second point is that that chicken is definitely cheaper. It's been sold cheaper than the untreated chicken. That was also easy to observe by just looking at portions, which is packed fresh, and what the per kilogram price was compared to the individually quick frozen portions. There is definitely a price difference in terms of that. As far as the labeling is concerned, you ask what should be generally on a label. Now, this new labeling regulations, as I say, it's almost 100 pages, but in the list of what's the main things covered, is, for instance, the labeling requires how it's been presented. For instance, the language, the legibility, and so on of the information, the letter sizes, that's been determined in the regulations. It's also the identification of the product. In other words, it requires a physical address of either the importer, the manufacturer, or the seller. It, for instance, country of origin will be from 1st of March required. Batch identification, in other words, not just a date marking for when the product's optimum quality will be changing, but also the date or the batch when it was manufactured. Date marking will then be required. Prohibited statements. There are certain statements which are not allowed on food labels. And then negative claims. You also don't allow that there's certain claims on labels. And then there's even a mandatory warning on certain foodstuffs which relates to pressurized products which, for instance, been sold in a aerosol and so on. Those are just some of the things. There's also the ingredients. And in terms of ingredients, there's different situations. In other words, certain seasonal ingredients, there's requirements how that should be done, and then the order of the list of ingredients. For instance, the list should always show from the ingredients of the product from the highest percentage in the product to the lowest percentage. Like, for instance, the chicken, 70% is chicken, that should be mentioned first. And then there's issues around indication of food additives like colorants, preservatives, thickness, and so. That needs, and then allergens. There's very clear regulation requirements now for the indication on the label of the allergen issues. Misleading descriptions are clarified, and then vegetarian claims, for instance. Irradiated foodstuffs. Other claims are, let's say, the main heading is nutritional information. That's also a requirement. In other words, the schedule showing what is the nutritional contents of the product. So that's just a summary of the general sort of background on label the information that needs to be provided on a food label. Thank you.
Okay. I only have two hands, Mr. Dutra and Mrs. Paliso, who are going to be the last on the matter. you know, the saying by one of the homeland leaders, you know, in the past, it was Mr. Sebe, talking about Mr. Matanzima and Mr. Mangope. You know, if Mangope can did it, I mean, if Mangope did it, why can't I did it? If we did it with the World Cup 2010 in a short space of time with such collaboration, why can't we did it now in such situations that are of national importance, like the one that we are dealing with here now? The other concern that I was having was whether is this the only area that we are dealing with that has such concerns. It may not be a question for today, but it's food for thought. But it would be quite important and very interesting just to get a, you know, pick off the brain from any of your three panelists here. Whether are we not dealing with other related issues, and what could those be? Mr. Dutoy and Mama Patterson, in that order.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. Look, I'm keep on laboring this weight issue. But it's I think this is the crux of the matter, as the gentleman said. The point is, if you put on your label, if you have a factory A, B, and C, and you put on your label 80 or 70%, how do you know it is 80 or 70%? How can we believe that it's true? There's only one way, two ways we can look at it. One, it is a lie, it's a tough thumb sucking. The other one, it is true. And how do they know it is true? Because they use the system I was talking about, the weighing system. So it is in their output, it must be in their costings, it must be in their printouts of the weight bridge, the weight bridges. So the system is there. And then if a factory would like to apply for 20% or 30% content, let them state it, let we regulate it, and let we monitor it, the way I also suggested. So the systems are there. We must just engage with them and get it done with, as you say, let's did it, or do it.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think some of the answers have given us clarity. But why are people not named and shamed who are misleading the public? Whether we public are buying the product that is less injected or most injected and not giving them the value for money, cheaper, it doesn't solve the matter. So I want to know why, what is the action taken? Are people named and shamed? And if not, why not? That's my last take, Chairperson.
Any feedbacks, and especially also on any other areas we might wish to be dealing with in the foreseeable immediate future. I guess also one other question, Mama, that the panelists are referring to is that, you know, there is no regulation. Is there regulation for the industry?
And honorable members, there is regulation. We have begun enforcement. Well, we've quoted the regulation to the extent that we allow 8% pickup. The problem is that we've had very weak systems in terms of enforcement, and that's how this problem grew to what it is at this point in time. in realizing that, I think it is unfortunate that we cannot name and shame, because the acts themselves prevent the release of information gathered in the wake of, because there's confidentiality issues. What we have done, for instance, is that one of the establishments where this happened, the process was stopped, they were stopped exporting, and therefore that has financial implications for them, that for them to be able to go back and participate in commerce, they would have to stop with those activities. And those are some of the actions that we have put in place at that very abattoir and processing plant.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I think we need to be frank about these things. The reality is that if we have regulations in place, but they're not enforced, and we don't have full compliance, every industry in South Africa will take the chance. That's the reality of it. It makes perfect business sense. So it's incumbent on government to make sure that these regulations are enforced and that compliance levels are high. I think in terms of the question that you specifically asked, Chair, but what other products, we've started looking at olive oil, for example. South Africa has fairly significant imports of olive oil, about 150 million rand a year, mainly from EU countries. We've got very good olive oil being produced in South Africa. And particularly in the Western Cape, we've got a range of farmers who produce good olive oil, who employ large numbers of people, but essentially our domestic production of olive oil has been displaced on shelves in South Africa by olive oil that's imported, in some cases, very poor quality olive oil, what's referred to as pomace olive oil, which is in fact not a natural olive oil process at all any further. It's a chemical process where solvent is applied to the remnants of the first and second and third pressings of olive oil, and what you get is actually a very inferior oil. In the EU, you cannot refer to pomace oil as olive oil. They're very specific about the regulation. The label is a pomace olive oil. So the consumers are aware right up front, you're not buying olive oil, you're buying pomace oil, actually. In South Africa, we haven't started to deal with that yet. Again, I'm embarrassed to admit, Chair and Honourable Members, we are discussing this at the moment, and we're developing a program to actually start dealing with some of these things. But perhaps we've been a bit slower than we should have been to do so. So there are other products, Chair, where these kinds of issues do arise, where we need to be more proactive. Certainly the fact that the border with Zimbabwe for chickens exported from South Africa was shut so rapidly as a result of the media reports shows that other countries are not willing to wait and hope that standards are met, etc. Other countries do so and respond much more rapidly, and I think as government we need to start responding more rapidly. DTI institutions have a slightly different take on confidentiality issues and whether names can be mentioned and shamed, and so perhaps I can ask my colleagues from NRCS just to highlight what the NRCS approach is in this particular area. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. I think just in terms to just maybe put a positive spin on it as well, in the areas where the Inoshi is Act, where we actually received mandates from different government departments, including health and agriculture, to regulate a specific product. Being a food product, many products are regulated by us. I think in the order of 62 types of products, includes foodstuffs. So where we involved in foodstuffs, that includes all processed fish products and canned meat products. We are very effective in regulation. We do 100% inspection. Everything that is on the shelves has been checked in terms of consignments and batch. For imported products, manufactured products, we immediately name and shame if we pick up any inconsistency, if we pick up something from a factory, from a shelf, that doesn't meet the technical requirements of the regulation for safety for human consumption, it's immediately released to the media. So there is a few success stories as well. In terms of this particular product, I think because we only involved where we actually check the packaging, the outer contents, we will name and shame for that if we pick it up. When the mandate falls with us to actually name and shame, that we do through our website, we do it immediately within 24 hours if we pick up something like that. So just in short, in terms of how we operate. Thanks.
Thank you, honorable members. I'm from DAF also. I think there are a few issues that the chairperson has raised as food for thought. This is not the only issue that is currently receiving attention from the inspection agencies. There is an issue that the Department of Agriculture and Health are working in terms of cream that is being used out in terms in confectionaries where there is imitation cream being used as cream. That matter is receiving attention. But I would like to also respond. I think that Honourable Member Madam Nyalungu had asked a serious question that went unanswered. The issue around what happens with the people in rural areas, what are the promotion and awareness strategies that the department is having to ensure that people are informed of what is happening. Honourable members would know that earlier this year there was an approval of the new DAF structure. Within the DAF structure, you have got a directorate that deals with import and export. And part of the proposals that are there is that the import and export would be dealing with promotion and awareness in rural areas to ensure that people move out and ensure that our people in rural areas know what is happening. We have had such promotion and awareness units, but they were scattered all over the department. There is an amalgamation of these units to come into one to start with the work of ensuring that there is outreach programs in rural areas. I think the other issue, Chairperson, if you allow me to indicate, is the issue around compliance. Quite a lot has been said in terms of what has been done to ensure that there is compliance. Honourable members would understand that in 2007, there was an audit report that was done within the department in terms of the number of inspectors that the department had at that stage. At that stage, the department had 302 inspectors. We have since moved from that on to have 504 inspectors. That is a sizable move in terms of having more inspectors, but the issue is, are there enough inspectors to do that? And the answer is no. A breakdown of the inspections, you'd have 15 land border ports in South Africa. You have got agricultural inspectors. You have got at 5 airports, you have got agricultural inspectors. At 5 seaports, you have got agricultural inspectors. And furthermore, we have got 10 offices inland that is doing the inspections that we are dealing with. And these offices range from Joburg until here in Cape Town. But unfortunately, as I was saying, these services are done in metropolitan areas instead of even going down to the people in rural areas. The people move from metropolitan areas to go and do inspections even in these areas that we are at. We greatly admit that the numbers are not good enough. But what is important, I think, is that you have got the department did a country profile of how many inspection bodies do we have who are doing more or less the same job and going to the same place using government money. And that profile showed that we could do better by amalgamation of inspections. And I think that is where the IBAP tool comes into play, where we need to have a food safety agency that would deal with food safety issues, animal issues, and plant issues that would, in any area, try and amalgamate issues that we are dealing, because what we are doing currently, and that is part of the problem that we are having here, that the coagulation of government departments is at crisis time, instead of it being a standard practice to say that this is how we will be structured as government to ensure that there is food safety, there's animal safety, and there's plant safety in the country. Thanks a lot, Chair.
Mr. Pretorius, you being the very last person to speak.
Thank you for the honor, Chair. I think just on the issue you mentioned about if there's any other issues that could come up, I think from health side, maybe to mention that we are committed to the World Health Organization's global strategy on health, nutrition, and physical exercise. and that it is specifically aimed at addressing a number of health problems, public health problems, amongst others, the issue of chronic diseases and so on. Now, in that strategy, there are three factors in terms of nutrition identified, which is of concern, and that is in terms of processed foodstuffs, the amount of sugar in certain products, the amount of trans fats in certain products, and then the amount of salt in certain products, and also the combination thereof in some of the products. Now, on the issue of trans fats, we have published in February a regulation which is now limiting the industrially produced trans fats in processed foods. The issue of salt, however, is currently being under discussion in the Department of Health. And I think I need to mention that we should just caution that we do not see the brine in chicken as the only processed foodstuff which has serious concerns in terms of what's referred to as hidden salts. There's been a warning out by the FDA in the U.S. where they identified three foodstuffs which are definitely applicable to South Africa as well, with two high levels of foods of salt in it. The one is pasta, the second is bread, and the third is chicken. So those three have been identified, and they're all three part of the food basket in South Africa. So I think we should take note that these issues are wider than just the chicken issue. Thank you.
Members, I think we have come to the end of our session for now. We have the departments. The point, once again, if we did it during World Cup 2010, why can't we did it? So that we are able to work together. Once again, the slogan goes on, working together, we can do a lot more. Thanks for the time and thanks for the presentations. I'm anticipating a situation wherein sometime in June we might have to come back, especially after your April report shall have been presented, done by ARC on the research. And also, if we can, Dinawo, get those 100 pages of that regulation, so that we are able at our leisure time to go through those, so that we capacitate ourselves a lot more. And I can tell you, Mr. Pretorius, these members do read. I thought you wanted to intimidate them when you're saying, 100 odd pages. These members do read. And you'll be very shocked, when you are going to be referred to any particular page, of that regulation. That will be, illustrating a point that, yes, the members have, read, your regulation. We should release you and then deal with one last item that Dr. Bosman wanted to raise. And those that did not work today, I'm sure in the next session shall work from among yourselves, as those who presented and those intervened and so on and so forth. I've made note of some of them. Thanks for your time and all the best. I'm sure we can go ahead whilst everybody else is...
Jay, thank you for the opportunity to speak to the committee on our report back on certain issues and reports released to the House of Parliament. You will all know that our procedure that we follow is that we discuss issues here, or we go on oversight, we bring those reports back to this committee, we discuss it, and we jointly agree to what is going to be represented or presented to the House as our report on the specific issues. Now, what happened last Thursday, I would like to put on in no uncertain terms on the table that the DA was quite shocked in the first place, and we rejected the way that you misused your position in the House to misrepresent a report to the House by not even referring to the report but making a political speech referring to all sorts of issues that was not related to the report. For instance, and if you want me, I can quote to you some of the things that you said, that the fishing community, like farm workers, work on a seasonal basis. They work for a few months only with no benefits, like unemployment insurance funds, like leave, like pension and medical aid. Now, Chair, obviously, this is incorrect. It's not based on facts. And you must, I think, what I call for is you to avail yourself of the facts when you make statements in the House. The Department of Labor has results, and also they've got reports on unemployment insurance funds, which must be paid for all workers in the agricultural sector. They must be given leave. They've got a minimum wage. They send out inspectors regularly, and those reports are available. I don't know why you make use of it, and then come and make a misrepresentation to the Parliament on these issues is unacceptable to us. I call on you, Chair, really, to in future, when we agree to a report in this committee, that we stick to the report, like the other committee members have done and their chairman have done, and not make use of this opportunity to make a political speech not relevant to the report on at the time. And if this really happens again, we will have to, from the DA, put a more firm stance and maybe bring a motion of no confidence in the chair and write a letter to the Speaker of Parliament. Thank you, Chair.
Any comments?
Thank you, Chairperson. I don't know what is the point of departure. To me, is that there are reports, and the truth is, that is what we picked up in the oversight when we were visiting those areas. So for us to hide the reality that is happening on the ground is also not acceptable. For us, it's to alarmingly, very alarmingly, address what the people is giving us. If we are not going to address that effectively, Chair, why are we saying that we are public reps if we want to selectively address issues on the ground affecting the poor? Because these issues are affecting the poorest of the poor, and there is a need, some way for you, to raise it. Whether in the House, whether in the manner of a motion, whether in the manner of tabling the report, you are free to raise the issues. Issues that are raised by the people on the ground. Reports are there, they are made by officials. They do have reports. We agree with that. But this was reality that we faced. We were physically there. It was reality. So I don't see what is the emotions about this. I don't see what is not relevant about this. Because the relevance is it is happening on the ground. It is happening. I don't know how I can stress it that it is happening.
Mr. desperate to try?
Yes, maybe we set out on that trip to find something. For me on that trip, it looked like we were looking too hard to find fault somewhere, and we did not. At one point, you remember that there was almost an interrogation of this company, this one company, and the other company, which turned out to be a level 3 BEE, there was nothing wrong there. And all this came into the report, and we went through the report, and there was none of the stuff that's being talked about now in this report, because we went on a fact-finding mission. Then we must put this in the report, and then we must go through it as a committee. And if the DA does not, agree with it, we will make a statement on it, and we will differ from it, and we will put our names under the report. But that report was drawn up, and it was, I think, a true reflection of what happened. And this report does not correspond with what you said. Okay. Now, Dr. Bosman has made his peace with what you said. He gave his point. The other point is that if the member wants to bring up stuff that is going on the ground, as she puts it, and the problems that exist, we know that problems exist in this country, but it's not for us to take a report and use that as a basis to make another standpoint. If we want to discuss problems outside this report, then we must ask for a debate. Then the member can stand up tomorrow or any time and say that she, on behalf of the ANC, wants to debate this point. And we can do it and everybody can do it. Then we can have a nice, fat debate on it. Okay? Then we each have our times and the whole katuti can talk about it. And then we can splash and cut open the bellies and rip out the intestines in politics. Then it's politics. Then it's not this. This is a report that was tabled, and we must stand with this report. So I understand the member. She's a politician, and if she wants to make politics, she can't make it on the report that we've all agreed upon. She must ask for a debate. Thank you.
And Mama Tara?
I don't understand. What is the bone of contention here? If what was said in the statement is what is happening, I don't see now what is it that you are debating about here.
I think I've got a reply, Chair.
There are two issues here, Dr. Bosman, in the report. One talks to the casualization that you have in the fishing industry, like you have in the farms. You don't have any casuals in the farms. Now, those that go into those boats and stay there in the sea waters, a number of them are casuals that do not have any benefits. It's a fact. That's what we picked up there. Fronting is also what we picked up there, especially when we met with those communities. We were all there. When we heard a number of them talking to us about fronting, the department officials were also there. They picked up and they registered those concerns. Those are the main two issues that I was reflecting on out of that report in my statement.
Chair, can I make a reply on it? Because I don't want to stretch it out too much. The question was quite clear. Why have I put it on the table? The fact why I'm putting it on the table is that your statements in Parliament was quite to the negative of what the reports are saying. And what you're saying now that is in the report, Chair, here's the report. It's not in the report. The facts of the matter in this report reflects on the standards of those companies, the skills development that those people are spending on, the amount of employers that are employed, the standards of BEE compliance, and nothing is in that report of the sort that you are putting on the table. But the thing is what you are doing further. You are dragging this issue of fisheries, which is a separate commodity in the agricultural sector. It's not a general affairs issue. You cannot take the fisheries sector and say that they are casualized and make it a point in the agricultural sector, because then you don't understand the agricultural sector at all. What you've stated here, and I'll take you on it, I'll give you the facts of what you've stated here. You say that the agricultural farm workers in this country do not pay UIF. They do not get leave. They do not get any other benefits like pension or medical aid. I myself is the chairman of the agricultural sector pension and funeral fund. Thousands of farm workers and their employers are paying their monies into this fund to have a pension and the funeral funds. The Department of Labor is annually, not even annually, monthly, bringing out reports. You can go to the CCMA's report. Just do yourself a favor and see how the agricultural sector compares to other sectors in this country. The agricultural sector employs the most workers in the country, percentage-wise. They are compliant more than some of the other sectors in the country. So just get back to the facts and don't make statements like this. That is my point. I'm not arguing with anything else. If you want to make statements, get to the basis of the report and report to the Parliament what we've agreed to, not what we've not agreed to, because we've not agreed to these issues. And I will not agree to it in any case, unless I'm convinced otherwise. And that is the point that I want to make. And that is why I'm asking you in future, do not deviate from the report, whether it's a West Coast info report or any other report that we bring onto the table. Like for today, we got a report. We will eventually land up with a report of the report that was given to the chicken industry. Let us just stick to the facts. Thank you.
Chairperson, I don't know what is the discussion and what is the argument here. Because if we talk politics, everybody is talking politics. The DA is talking politics. That is what is happening here. Because here is defending a position of my conflict of interest. This is not defending a position of the portfolio committee. But because I'm repeating myself saying that this is not about a debate or a political debate. This is about the reality on the ground. And I don't think we are going to put you into a cocoon in this portfolio committee. You must give me a chance. I was quiet while you were speaking, so you will also respect me while I'm speaking. We are not, no, you are going to respect me. No, you will respect me. You will respect me. I was quiet when you were speaking.
Thanks, Mama.
We are not going to put you into a cocoon and dictate to you how you must present yourself in the House. This committee is not going to do that. So, Chairperson, what I'm saying here is that reality on the ground must be exposed. It must be exposed what is happening there on the ground. If we are talking about BEE, we are not talking about fronting of BEE. If the report states BEE, you have to go into the matter of the BEE, what we experienced when we were on oversight. Why must we hide that? We have no reason to hide that, Chairperson. Thank you.
In fact, members, I think I also owe this committee that report emanating out of that oversight visit, a report that talks to one of those fronting cases. There is action in one company. I've made reference to in my statement in the House. Among others, the allocation to that company that is fronting has since been put on hold by the department. Kalahari.
Did we visit Kalahari?
I have said earlier on that out of a community session that we all were part of,
there were people who reported fronting cases. Among those was this that I have just made mention of. Then there was a process that went through from those that were disadvantaged because they couldn't afford lawyers and so on. As public representatives like yourself and myself, we took the case up with the department. Among others, this company mentioned presented to the department fraudulent tax clearance certificates on three occasions. When SARS was inquired upon those tax clearance certificates, they were not in their records. Those other members that were disadvantaged in the company, they also had to receive a sum of about 600,000 rand that they are owing to the receiver. Just to give you a glimpse of what had to be processed out of that visit that we did. Just to cite but one example.
Okay. Chairperson, now you say we. Now who is this we? Because this contingent of the committee did not follow up. If you say we, is it department? Is it a political party? Is it a committee? But it is not the two of us. We were not involved, first of all. Second of all, if something flows from this, where is this report that you're talking about? I mean, we're also concerned if there was fronting. Who is this Kalahari? Is it one of the two holding companies, one of the companies that we visited? Because we visited two companies, you understand? And we visited the community. Now, this is what is in the report. This is the report. Then we must bring out another report on, you know, it's flowing from. But you can't take this report, we go with it, and then you go and out of the blue, stand up and talk about fronting and things that we know nothing about. There's nothing in the report. Where is this report? Why has it been kept from us? Why isn't it kept? Sorry, Chairperson. Where is this report? Why has it been put before the front of the committee? Because I haven't seen it. I don't know if the member left or you see it, whoever has seen it. But we need to see it.